Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Hi, and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host, and we welcome you to the show. We hope you're having a blessed and wonderful Memorial Day. Today is May the 27th. It's Monday, Memorial Day. And welcome, Michael, to the show.
Thank you, sweetie.
You're not on, Michael. So we'll talk just a minute until he gets it switched over.
Excuse me.
There we go.
That mute button. It's always been a problem in my life. Oh, well. Welcome, everybody, to the show. Thank you, sweetie, for the introduction. Nice to be with each of you and have this opportunity once again to talk about the ancient healing technology of forgiveness.
The technology that changes minds, hearts, and beings at every turn when it's applied. And today is Memorial Day, and once again, we're in the celebration of the Memorial Day holiday, which is kind of an interesting word to use, celebration, but to honor those who have been forced to engage in that insanity called war. We call forward all the resources we have to bring healing to every mind, heart, and being on the planet, that we might put an end to that insanity that has been just has overtaken so many minds with its ill-gotten reputation of somehow benefiting humanity. It's time for us to wake up, time for us to realize what's really going on and what a cancer war is on the planet. Time for us to start to recognize that as it is purported to be a way to get rid of evil, it spawns more pain, more trauma, more evil than it could ever start to eradicate. And we've been tricked, we've been fooled, and it's time to put an end to it. How do you put an end to war? Now, come on, Michael, that's ridiculous. Men have been warring for thousands of years, yes. Men trapped in hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, and pain want to take it out on somebody. And how are we going to end it? Well, we're going to bring the technology with which to put an end to hostility, fear, rage, guilt, grief, and pain for forgiveness. And that technology is quite the opposite of what our culture teaches as forgiveness. We've been told that forgiveness is all about how I let you off the hook for what's happening inside of me, that you're the cause of my pain, but I forgive you. And if I engage in that insanity and call that forgiveness, that I have pardoned adequately, and thinking that I've forgiven when all I'm doing is pardoning, I miss the opportunity to go about doing the forgiveness work that would bring me healing. So forgiveness, we recognize, is the technology and the tool with which to go inside yourself and remove what never belonged, and what never belonged in you is anything other than your human life. And We have a very simple definition of a human life. Hold a newborn child, you know exactly what a human life is. And that awesome presence of love is what we are each designed to experience and express as. And when one comes into this game, one's mind is so filled with the hostilities and fears and the insanities of the world that war gains an ill-gotten reputation of something beneficial. And we're here to stand against the fraud. We're here to stand against the lie and to recognize that it is only men's minds that have the cancer that produced the result called war. And it's time for us to stop it. It's time for us to take responsibility for our own part, for our own contribution in the process by letting loose of those hostilities, fears, grief, rages, and guilt that we blame others for, accessing those energies directly in ourselves, forgiving them, removing them, replacing them with the active presence of love, a human life, and moving forward as human beings. So that's what we're here for, and again, we hold a space for every person on the planet who's been touched by this insanity that somehow just seems to be able to keep moving forward. So you'd think anyone who looks at it would have to say, this is craziness on its face. And our wake-up call is one to say, let's bring a mind of love to the process. And as you bring a mind of love to the process, you'll start to do something different in your world than support or become a part of that insanity that has taken so many lives, broken so many hearts, and destroyed so many families. So we memorialize those who have been forced to engage in that process, who have been conned into believing that it's a beneficial process, and we're here to support the healing that needs to take place in every family, in every heart, in every mind on the planet that's been touched by it. And so we appreciate this opportunity to be with you. If you're doing war in your own family system, if you're doing war in your own heart, we're here to say, it's time to put an end to it. It's time to access that which you have warred over in yourself for perhaps decades and not known how to resolve. There is resolution. 2,000 years ago, a man named Yeshua brought a tool to the earth, a tool called forgiveness, a tool with which to go inside yourself and remove that internal war that ends up externalizing itself in the action of destruction of person and property and be restored to our birthright. So we're here to support the birthright of every mind, heart, and being on planet Earth being restored. Take us back to that space of that awesome presence of love. And as we go back to that, a different game happens on the planet. Individually, within family systems, within communities, within cultures, within the world. And so that's what we're here to support. Jeannie, do we have David with us today? Do we have Dr. Tim?
David is with us and he is on. Dr. Tim hasn't come on yet.
Oh, cool. Well, let's say hello to David. And David has had that direct experience. I think it was 2 years ago that we talked a fair bit about your experience in Vietnam, David, and your conclusions based on that, and what, if I remember correctly, when the question was asked, what was the most difficult part of that whole process for you? Your answer was that of being forced to take another life. And so I just, with that introduction in mind, I invite you to give us some input and share your thoughts on what you found with the forgiveness process and how the whole game works and what's possible. Welcome. Are you there, David? Okay, well, I assume David's away from the phone for now, so what we'll do is just turn to the chat room, see if there are any questions, hands up, anything happening in the chat room, and when with a question in the phone queue, sweetie?
Nope, nobody has their hand up, and there's no questions going on in the chat.
Well, it would be cool if somebody had a thought, a question for us. David's disappeared? Oh, okay. Ouch. Okay. Well, David. Oh, he's there. Oh, you say he just appeared.
No.
Oh.
But I don't know if he's listening.
Okay. Well, let's see if we can find David again. Are you with us, David? Doesn't sound like it. Okay. Well, once again, welcome everybody. And I'm not necessarily putting forward the theme of the show being this particular conversation, but certainly with it being Memorial Day, I do wish to mention and honor everyone who has been forced into that trauma. Jeannie did some research recently and found some statistics at Cornell University that said that in the last 75 years in our world, 250 million people have been murdered on the planet in war. Like, how crazy is this? Let's wake up. It's time to change. And we've got a hand up. So, area code
949, you're on the air. Who do we have?
949, you're with us. Hello, 949, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Oh, there she is. Hey there, young lady. How are you?
Hey, I'm great.
Did you hear your voice?
Hey, Jeannie and Michael. Yes, very good to hear you guys. Well, I had some time to tune in this morning, so I wanted to do that and say hello. And since your other guest wasn't there, I thought I would just let you know that I'm on the line.
Cool. Well, why don't you share a little bit about... this, by the way, is Catherine, someone who's been engaged in work for, I think the first time we met was 23 or 24 years ago in Michigan at Creative Health Institute. We were doing an intensive.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Yeah, it's probably been, it might even be over 25 years now. I'd have to kind of do the numbers on it. It's been a good long
time. I think it was 1988.
Let me think. I think my daughter was born in 85, and she was only about a year or two at the most. It was probably, you're really close, Michael. Probably 88, 87. Yeah. So, anyway, I just want to thank both of you for what you do.
Share with a little bit about your story about how forgiveness has impacted your life, how finding that Aramaic technology has, what's it done in your world? And what are you doing with
it? Oh, my goodness. Well, I would say, what just pops up into my mind first and foremost is I remember, luckily I was, in my 20s when I first met you and your work. And so I hadn't gotten very far along in my life. Luckily I'd had a life of that had certainly trauma in it, but not as much insanity as some people are raised in. And yet, starting off with my family, it was a very new family, young family when I first met you. Certainly things were, starting to become resonated and I'd had, my own issues as a kid. And I remember the very first one of the very first things that stuck with me from your work was, well, not everybody has the same reality as I do. And I used to be so confused because I felt so misunderstood and I couldn't understand why people weren't getting what I was trying to say and why there was conflict that way. And just the realization of that alone, if that could have been the only realization, was priceless, because it allowed me to be able to open my mind and try and understand another person's point of view and realize that the conflict often stems right from that particular place. Now, there was so much more to your work than just that, but that was kind of like a little door that opened that, just pulled back an enormous curtain. And I know as a child I'd made a commitment to myself when I had seen people really vehemently fighting, and anyway, in my perception they were vehemently fighting. I've experienced so much pain as a child watching people argue that it was, you know, unspeakably painful. And it wasn't until I was really in my 30s that, you know, even with the realization you gave me in my 20s, that I finally realized I'm not sure if they're experiencing as much pain as I am watching them, because of how what it was resonating in me. And so at a time of when I was like 5 years old, I made a commitment that I wanted to do whatever I could to help people understand each other better. I wanted to end the conflict in the world, and that's pretty weighty thing for a five-year-old to decide that they think they're going to do, but that's you know, kind of what came to me at five, and I proceeded to really act in accord with that from that moment on in many, many ways in my life. And without your tools, I would be very, very, very stuck, and certainly an enormous project to work on the conflict in myself, and then also help to, you know, facilitate other people as well. But it's just so amazing, and really doing the work yourself is the huge key. There was you know, as you were talking about war, I think of those of us that might like to think that we're moving toward being more and more enlightened. We still see crazy stuff happening out in the world, and if, you know, I find for myself, if I'm not doing my own work, it's so easy to kind of have the war against the reality that I'm looking at outside of myself, you know, with, you know, the war on the, you know, medical establishment, or the war against, you know, unhealthy foods, or all of these things. And as I do my own work, I realize, you know, those things are there because they're giving me an opportunity to look at the, you know, the reflections of the resonance I have inside of myself, you know, and as if I keep taking that apart within myself, I know that's going to be one of the most effective things I can do to make those systems fall, because they won't need to be in reality anymore, because I don't need a reflection back of something like that. So I don't know if that's a little abstract, but I thought it might be a little bit in keeping with your theme about war today.
No, I think you're right on track. I think you're really touching into one of the deepest aspects of the healing process, and that is that what we do look at inside of ourselves is inside of ourselves, and if we look at something with disturbance, then the work that needs to be done is our own, and then having done the work of healing whatever the pain and turmoil is, then we bring a mind of love to the insanity, and we can facilitate it shifting and changing in ways that just seem quite impossible and miraculous. So we're delighted to have you on the team and being out there in California, just moving forward with forgiveness in your own world. And I know that you're sharing with others and working with people on a one-to-one basis. I don't know if you've got a support group started out there yet, but that might be something to think about. The Mind Shifter support groups are really growing in strength around the country, around the globe. And it's a way to ground the work that opens a space for others to access what otherwise becomes impossible to access. It's not necessarily a popular thing in the culture to acknowledge the insanities of the culture and go to work removing them. That's not exactly something that the culture wants to have done. And so I don't know if you've thought about that, but Jeannie has put a huge quantity of information on forming support groups on the website. If there's any way that we can support you in that regard, if that's a thing to do within your purpose, then that would be cool too.
Oh, absolutely, certainly. That sounds wonderful. Is it a structure? You know, oddly enough, you know, my life just kind of took me down some paths where I've learned a lot about virtual communication, and so I have clients somewhat all over the world, but especially all over the country, and I'd love to be able to kind of facilitate them, you know, touching into your tools and doing a support group. Does a support group pretty much need to be in a physical space, or could it be done virtually?
No, this radio show, you know, this radio show is one of our efforts to create support for the work around the planet. You know, in the past, one of the deficiencies of our work has always been that if we went to a particular city and a support group didn't start, then the tendency would be for, you know, the work to just kind of fall away, because it's not an easy thing to do within a culture that's moving in a direction that is opposite to the healing process, to keep yourself on track. And so this is one of the ways that we have opened the space, and we feel really blessed to have the show every day or 5 days a week, so that anybody on the globe who needs support for shifting their minds into truth and into the human life, the true presence of love, has got support for doing that. And I know that we've had a few conversations recently about some of the things you've been doing in the computer world, and I would like to see another structure for a virtual MindShifter support group. So that would be really awesome, and you'd certainly have our full support if you chose to do that.
That sounds absolutely great, yeah. More and more, you know, I think I may have mentioned it in the beginning, but more and more it's just coming to my attention that I'd love to try to put some kind of virtual global summit together with you guys, and then not that the support group couldn't also just form prior to that, but then after, you know, maybe the global summit, we could link people into that virtual support group, you know, so they could carry on going forward. You know, I don't know, because I haven't looked at your tools yet, Jeannie, but I was thinking that maybe at one part of the support group, if I did it virtually, maybe the first, you know, X amount of minutes would be spent in silence while everyone did at least one or two worksheets, and then maybe, you know, shared some of their experience if they felt so inclined, and then they could also ask questions, just to make sure people are staying in, you know, kind of on track with doing their own work. And sometimes, you know, when you come together with the intention to do it, it helps to facilitate people through the resistance of just letting life get in the way and never, you know, taking the time for yourself to pull up a worksheet and do it.
That sounds like a cool idea. It'd be interesting to see that manifest and come together. So any way we can support you, that would be fabulous.
That would be great. I know I don't know if you had a chance to see my email. Is there any way that I just don't have the easiest way to work with CDs? Is there, if I were to, you know, pay you guys for, you know, some of your coursework, would it be possible to get just like the MP3 or MP4 files of it so that I can watch it and work with it on my iPad as pretty conveniently, or is that not really very accessible, or would you prefer not to do that?
Well, it is something that we're working on doing and setting up. We just haven't gotten as far as having them available digitally, but that is a project that's underway, is putting them in that format so that anyone could, as we had discussed, setting up some kind of a membership sort of thing, so that anyone who chose to could access them anytime. So that's in process, and just one more of those plates that we're spinning of the thousands that we spin to keep this moving on a global level.
Oh, sure. Well, you know, and I don't know where you are, and I you know, only want to be of, you know, kind of support. But, you know, if in fact you just need somebody to do the work, that work, I mean, I'm happy to do that. If you guys, I mean, when you you know, send off your files. I would assume you send off MP3 or MP4 files to whoever burns the CDs and packages them for you. Is that the way you guys do it, or do you actually send them hard CDs to copy?
Actually, they have hard CDs to copy. They've converted video to a DVD or CD and audio to a CD format.
I see. So it's never really been taken off the CD and just burned onto like a hard drive so that it's a file.
Correct.
At this point. Everything's
correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay.
That's part of
well,
what
there's
we're
certainly
looking at.
Okay. Well, I can help you. I'm sure I can help find somebody who could take those and just burn them onto a hard drive and then be able to, you know, upload them onto my server so I could work with them. You know, if that's something you'd like to facilitate, I just feel that that would be absolutely huge. And, you know, I'm already seeing, you know, with the summit, you know, there's just kind of, there's structures and ways that you, you know, put the summit together, and predominantly, you know, there's some video that goes on the front end as you're trying to get people to accept the invitation to the summit. The summit's usually given for free. And so I thought if I really took the time to go through all the material, you'll probably have suggestions too, but then we could decide on what you felt you'd want to cover in the summit, how long you'd want the summit to be, how many days long. Sometimes summits can be as short as 3 days and sometimes as long as a week to 2 weeks, depending on, you know, how many different speakers and all of that. But I was thinking, you know, it can be approached two different ways. We could have several different speakers and maybe have like a Marianne Williamson. I have a contact into Marianne Williamson and Gabriella Bernstein. Or we could just focus just on this work, which I'm, you know, I'm kind of intuitively leaning to more so, but, you know, I'd be open to what you think you would prefer.
Right.
And then usually on the back end, mm-hmm. You wouldn't talk about that at a different time, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe this is a conversation that we can pick up and do on a one-on-one basis and just see what that looks like and how it develops, and keep our focus here with the show on how we can support people with their questions, and you know, really being a mind shifter support group is, you know, what kind of issues can we support people with? What kind of understanding is needed, and questions about the specifics of the tools and the work?
Well, I know I asked you a question last time, or I have a question a little bit, and I know it's covered in your CDs, but if it seems appropriate, I know we were talking a little bit about goals before, and I know when you're going through the worksheet, you kind of are canceling, you know, your desire for a particular goal, and then later you're reestablishing a goal. And I was just, if you know, kind of curious about that. In my experience, when I'm canceling that first goal, I'm usually, you know, consciously aware that that goal is like connected to, you know, frequencies and belief patterns and emotions and energies that are distorted. And so
right.
A lot of times when I come back around and I reestablish a goal, it might somewhat look like that, but it feels completely different. Am I on track with what I'm experiencing there?
Yeah, you're right on track. The idea, you know, when we look at, you know, one of the things we talk about in the Why Workshop is the Harvard research that says that in a time frame where 10,000 brain cells fire, the max amount of information that gets into conscious awareness, the data that holds the pain, the turmoil, the trauma that people feel, that max is 9 bits. It's just a very small fragment. And the reason why the goal is of such importance and such a key is because it's our goals that determine which data the mind is going to use. Is the mind going to use data based in delight and joy, or is the mind going to use data based in hostility or fear? Is the mind going to use data based in truth, or is the mind going to perpetuate the lie that my pain is all about you and what you did, and it's all your fault because if only you'd done this, then I'd be feeling okay. And so the goal is, you know, is the major key in accessing the dissociated parts of the mind. And this is the toughest part in the whole process. You know, our functional definition in this work is, when I talk about somebody else, when I'm in pain or turmoil and I talk about somebody else, I have to hide the part of my mind with which I can't create my pain and my turmoil. And my mind literally uses that dissociated data to build a picture of you, and you become the problem in my life. You know, of course, not you personally, mm-hmm. but generically, whoever somebody's looking at, the pain or turmoil is coming from the resonating of what's inside of oneself, and the picture that one sees is a false picture using that very content that is painful to build the images in the world that we see. And so the forgiveness process, as it was taught in the Hermetic, the core of the process is to cancel the goal, thereby collapsing the reality, the picture, the output from the painful content, collapsing the picture that it's got something to do with something outside of us, and giving us direct access to what's inside. And as you remember in step four in the process, really keying in and strengthening the active presence of love. And then once you have direct access to that painful or dissociated content, which may be literally generations and generations old, then with the presence of love and that painful content opening, the opening of that part of the mind automatically begins to literally transmute or change the energetic patterns of our pain. The presence of love always does that. I love what Rumi, a 13th century mystic, says. He says that in the presence of love, all pain becomes medicine. And most people carry around literally eons and eons and eons of pain, and the only time that they see the pain, the only time they talk about the pain is when their mind is showing them that it's about somebody else and has nothing to do with them. So collapsing the goal literally begins the dissolution of the pain. And then the reestablishment of a goal, you know, the step in step number five, I cancel the goal I have for that person I'm projecting my pain on. And then in step seven, I'm reestablishing a goal for my mind toward them. And I create that goal out of my mind, the mind of love. And so as I load a new goal, my perception, the perceptual output of my mind will tend to shift dramatically. And, you know, when they said to Yeshua, you know, how many of these worksheets do we have to do in Aramaic, his answer was 77 times 70, which, you know, is not a literal number, but means an infinite number of times till I'm complete with whatever that dynamic is in me. And so each time I do another piece of forgiveness work, I literally change the content of the brain cells that show me what I think is outside of me that is really nothing but a reflection of what's inside of me. And so I think you're right on with that understanding, because each time you do it, each worksheet that you do will dissolve another layer, another layer, another level, until one gets to the point where, in a particular situation that yesterday may have been terror and trauma, all of a sudden it's just zero terror and trauma. It's the presence of love. And then one starts to step into a space of compassion for whoever the object of attention is, whoever they've been blaming for the pain, even if it's themselves and including themselves. And as each mind starts to move in that direction, life just starts to get to be a whole lot more fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the goal is the key.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned that the pain becomes the medicine. It's interesting, you know, another way one might say it, and correct me if I'm off track here, but it's almost like the projection, when you become aware that it's the projection and the person or the thing that's facilitating, you know, an ability for you to project onto it really becomes the gift, because without that experience, you couldn't look inside and you can't heal it, and you would be stuck.
Yeah, literally, the energy that needs to be healed is what turns into our physical diseases. And the person who never looks in there, they begin to deteriorate due to the content they hold. Of course, the deterioration happens over time, so people think, oh, well, you know, I'm just getting older. This has got to do with age. And the truth is, it hasn't got to do with age. It's got to do with the content of our cellular structure, the mind functioning through every cell in the structure. If it holds hostility or fear-based content, then literally the cells themselves are in a state of deterioration. And so when somebody shows up and plays out that part of our minds for us and we do collapse the projection, then we can start to literally access the cell in a way that it would otherwise not be accessible. And as you remove the content, yes, you get to the point where you say thank you to the person who showed you that content and gives you the opportunity to work through it and to move through it. And as you start to create relationships with people based in a level of understanding of this principle and of trust, the people closest to you who, you know, in the past, one points a finger and says, look at the pain you've caused me, literally starts to say, wow, I didn't know I had this pain in me. Thanks for showing it to me. And I step into deeper compassion and relationship with you with each forgiveness process that I do. So relationships tend to shift and move into an upward direction rather than what most of the world, you know, believes about relationship as well, you know. It just, you know, that's just the way relationships are. They just kind of deteriorate and fall apart and love dies, which isn't true. It has to be murdered. It's murdered. It's murdered by me saying the three magic words, you made me, and when I blame you, the tendency is for the average person to disappear from relationship or go into their own pain and turmoil, and it becomes a war of trauma-based realities. The movie War of the Roses is a powerful demonstration of that insanity. And if one or the other, based in that kind of a war, and we see it happen all the time, even in cases where that person's just at war with themselves and what's going on inside of them, those things just start to lift and heal in the most dramatic way, in ways that are totally and completely irrational and illogical, according to the way the world thinks. But it's most amazing and most gratifying to get to work with people and see those things as they dissipate and disappear. We actually did.
Well,
I
remember. Oh, you go ahead.
Go ahead. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I just, you know, as you were speaking, I remember something else that very much, you know, made a huge impression on me, which was just, and it's so simple to remember, you know, if you're in pain, then you're in error. And that doesn't mean you're wrong or you're bad. There's just something to pay attention to. It's just an error, you know. And so, like, if you had an error on your computer, you needed to run a, you know, a scan computer program just to clean off any corrupted files to protect your computer. It's just that simple. It's that non-personal. If you put your hand on, you know, a burner that you didn't realize was hot, you know, you're going to get pain, but that's giving you feedback, or you'd burn off your skin, so you need to take your own personal action. And so, you know, just beginning to kind of reframe what pain's there for. I remember you said, you know, if it, you know, it's really there to give you the ears to hear, that the, you know, have a sensory experience to get you to pay attention. And as you were talking about the War of the Roses, or, you know, the murdering of a relationship, you know, just it reminds me, it just keeps intensifying, trying to get you, hoping that if it escalates enough, you'll pay attention, because your life really depends on it. So the alarm has to get louder and louder, kind of like a fire alarm has to get louder and louder if you're not, you know, paying attention to it, or, you know, maybe you're not going to leave the house in time, so to speak.
Exactly. And many people who won't take that action, who won't look inside, move into all kinds of adaptations to try to keep that stress out of view, the internalized stress that they're being warned about. you know, things like psychosis. Psychosis is just the mind's way of managing stress. I can't deal with what's going on here, so one goes into psychosis. Alcoholism, drug abuse, just criminality are all adaptations to stress. And when you recognize that all the stress is internal and it's manageable, if you go back to the ancient Aramaic where they talked about law in the Aramaic had nothing to do with being the rule of a superior. Law was simply a result of the way the eternal forces in the world operate. And when we come into avoidable collision with those laws, we get hurt. But most people won't listen to those internal stresses and the hurt that's created by those avoidable collisions, and so end up going into some kind of aberrant behavior in order to try to cope with that stress. And my offering is that all mental illness is simply a result of that. And if we start handing people who supposedly and ostensibly have mental illness the tools of forgiveness, they'll start to collapse the need for the aberrant behavior to try to avoid or manage the stresses that are going on inside of them. Unfortunately, our culture just doesn't teach people those things. They just, you know, send them off in a world with all kinds of drama and trauma, and don't equip them to deal with that. They equip them to deal with making money, but not with dealing with what's going on inside themselves and in the context of their family systems and relationships and their homes.
Well, even, you know, it was interesting to me, I can't remember if it was in your book or where it was, and just coming back through your material lately and seeing, or maybe you had mentioned it to me, I can't remember, but that anger creates, you know, and I can't remember what it is, but a chemical inside the body, right, that's almost like drugging yourself. Right, and so people think, you know, I've got to blow off this steam. I've got to blow off this steam, and I have a right to blow off the steam. But what it is they might as well just say, I've got to handle this stress. I'm going to inject myself with some heroin right now, and then I'll feel a lot better. And I've just got to do this because I'm just filled with anger. And so they don't realize that it's not any different, you know. And they see that it worked. It feels better inside of them to let all that rage everywhere. So they think that that's, you know, like an acceptable answer. They don't really realize what they're doing.
Yes, and it is quite literally a drug. It isn't almost like a drug. It is actually literally a drug when one goes into that state of hostility, and it anesthetizes us, keeps us from feeling. And I know that, you know, over the years in working with people in intensives, we work to stir, if people have hostility, to stir that hostility. And then if we can just get them to take 1 second of trust to drop the hostility, they go right into the pain, the turmoil. I mean, this 6'4" guy, you know, 280 pounds, and, you know, warrior, and, you know, angry, and, you know, fighting. And when we can get him to drop that for a second, we're standing in front of a 3-year-old boy who was hurt in an interaction with, you know, a sibling, a parent, or whatever, and that pain being unresolvable. And the culture not having equipped children, having equipped us with the tools to delete that pain, the expression of the anger grows and grows and grows until it's crazy time. I know we had a young man who did a show with us back about 6 months ago, and he had been in special forces, had spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and many different, you know, covert missions and such, and he shared with us when he came back that he literally did a fifth of whiskey a day, and in the evenings he would go trolling in crack neighborhoods, not because he was interested in crack, he never did crack, but he would go trolling crack neighborhoods hoping that somebody would attack him and he'd have a justified reason for, in rage, beating the hell out of somebody. And that as he found the forgiveness process, he was able to delete that behavior from his life and start to shift in a different direction. So it's pretty awesome to watch how that happens when somebody's given the tools. And, you know, these are tools that the 3-year-old should have. These are tools that the children, we had a young man on the show last week who had just really come in touch with the tools over the previous couple of months and watched his son in anger and shared the worksheet with his son and showed his son how to handle it. I mean, literally totally changed the whole family dynamic. The genetic history of that young man was changed in one interaction with his son as he showed his son how to handle a worksheet. And then he shared with us, he was actually just up here in Lansing for the workshop we were doing this last week. And he shared with us that, a short time later, he was out on his deck doing a worksheet, and his son comes out and is like, "Hey, Dad, what are you working on?" And he's sitting with his son, sharing his pain and his turmoil. His son's 7 and a half. Instead of a dad who rages at his son out of his pain, he's sharing with him how he's working through it. It's like, he's literally changed the genetics of the family. It's pretty awesome to be part of that and to watch that happen.
You know, as you talk about the genetics of the family, I was reading Bruce Lipton's book. I know you're so busy all the time, you may never have read it, but he talks about. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. You've read that? Have you read it?
I've read parts of it. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So he talks about, the energetics, being of the couple being transferred, through the umbilical cord into the fetus, and really in preparation. So when the baby is born, it's kind of tuned to the circumstances of the environment it's going to have to live in, which kind of makes some sense. But of course, if it's an insane environment, then that baby's already starting out with all kinds of kind of insane energies that are programmed into it. And I was kind of curious, because I know that, so much of the Bible really isn't, telling us exactly what was meant to be told. But in the concept of original sin, is that maybe potentially a little bit what it's talking about? Is this, inheriting the genetics, pain of the past ancestry? Is that, because I know, growing up Catholic, there were certainly, there's a lot of pushback sometimes of why would a little baby actually have original sin? They're pure, this is wrong, something's wrong with this philosophy or what have you. But the fact is if it's really just trying to help us understand that, we're inheriting what's gone on before us, and it may not even have anything to do with our life, and we might have things we need to heal. But could you comment maybe on that a little bit?
Sure, absolutely. You're right on track with that, and it's not only being transferred through the umbilicus and the energetic dynamic that the child is experiencing in utero, but literally the genetic patterns of the generations. In the ancient scriptures, when they said the sins of the fathers will be passed down to 3 and 4 generations, they were not telling us that God's going to punish us for what our fathers did, but rather saying, here's how the energetic system works. Literally, every thought you think, every feeling you feel, every reality you engage in is stored holographically in every cell, including the sperm and the egg, and that's passed on from generation to generation. And then the really key part of that, that really gives us an important piece of information, is once it completes that statement of being passed into 3 and 4 generations, then you hear the statement made, yea, of those who hate me. And so we hear the Creator addressing humans, saying, not if you hate in terms of a love-hate relationship, but that word in Aramaic is those who are separated from me. Those who are separated from the activity and the active presence of love are stuck in the pain and the trauma and the turmoil of the generations. And until those generations are, removed, and that's the story of the Jews wandering in the desert for 40 years. It's pretty ridiculous to think you could get lost in a 30-square-mile area for 40 years if we were talking about a physical desert. But what they're really saying is that that desert there is a code word for the unconscious, that people who are stuck in those unconscious dynamics are going to be lost in those dynamics until they reconnect with the active presence of love and begin the dissolution of what never belonged in the structure. So, yes, we're locked into the programming or the patterns of the generations, 3 to 4 generations, until we open the space to bring forward the active presence of love. Then there's a whole new possibility. Then we can do something different. And, yes, we all come in, and because the culture doesn't have the tools, we are stuck to that original error, that original insanity. Of course, at the same time, we have the original blessing of the true active presence of love that we are. And if we come into a culture who is able to support and reinforce that blessing, you know, as this young man I was just talking about was able to do, instead of when his son, you know, the challenge that his son had had was the Netflix wasn't working or something, and he threw down the remote in anger. And his dad said, you know, normally I'd have just pounded my fist on the table and, you know, kind of read him the riot act. And instead he said, son, what's happening? What's going on? What are you feeling? Well, I'm feeling angry. Would you like to come to a worksheet? And so he supports his son in processing out and removing his anger, forgiving his anger, instead of, you know, just trying to pound the anger back into his son, which is what was done in his generation. So he's, as I say, he's changed that family pattern. So there's original blessing as well. And any time that anyone chooses to step into the truth of who we are and bring that energy into the world, we're reinforcing that original blessing. And I think there's been too much focus on the whole idea of original sin, which really was something that was brought into the whole theological game by a fellow who was not very in control of his own sexual impulses. I'm trying to think of his name, Augustine. And he's the one who really brought in that concept of original sin. He couldn't control himself. So he said, oh, well, hey, how about if I just alleviate my guilt by convincing the church that we should talk about original sin, and then, you know, then I'm not responsible. It's just another way of avoiding responsibility and being in that denial and dissociation game. And again, to me, one of the most important concepts to come into this work in the last couple of years is that functional definition of denial. When I'm in pain or turmoil and I talk about anybody else's cause, I'm in denial and dissociation. I'm locked out of the healing of my own mind. And so that, of course, is what we're here to do, and we're delighted to have you on the team to be in support of doing it.
Well, I'm delighted to be on the team. Thank you very much.
All right. All right. Well, lots of love and blessings, and I think Jeannie's got another call for us.
Cool. Oh, super.
Okay, we're down to about 6 minutes, but I think this is Terry Bowling, 828. You're on the air.
Hey, Michael, Jeannie.
Hey there, young man. Delight to hear your voice. How do you be?
I'm doing very well, very well. I was thinking about you and wanted to reach out, and I got a message about the show, so I dialed in, and here we are.
Awesome. Delighted. Well, do you have anything to share with us on this Memorial Day as we've been talking about the healing of this insane dynamic of war and taking responsibility and moving things forward in a different way? I know that you've just done awesome work with your children and opening the space for shifts and changes to take place with them. And, you know, I'll never forget that first intensive that your 5-year-old and your 9-year-old had as they're laying there doing energy field work with each other and breathing each other. And it's been fun to watch that mature in them over the years as they've grown.
Yeah, it's really amazing, and it's certainly something that's enhanced every area of my life, the involvement with the workshops. And I was just reflecting on the enormity of the 2 years that I was able to spend there at Heartland and digging into this work and seeing the firsthand dynamics, then hearing you talk and all. One of the things that came up for me was that it's really about taking total responsibility for my life, and that's what the tools, when properly understood, are really perfect at doing that. You know, it takes everything right back to me, and I'm totally responsible for my life, and it's a much, much better way to live. So thank you, and I did want to, I know we're about out of time, was to offer my condolences to you. I know that you've been experiencing some things around your mother's passing and all, so I haven't had a chance to share that condolence with you, so I wanted to do that.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. We actually, I was fortunate enough to get to spend about 5 days with her the week before she passed. She was 96, and fortunately, we were able to convince the doctors to take her off all the medications that were, basically causing her to be out of her mind, but in a nursing home to be quite manageable, which sadly is what too often happens. And so that last few days she came back and was sharing with me stories about remembering when I was a little boy and such, and it's actually been about 10 years since she really knew who I was, and so it was pretty cool to be in that space with her, and I'm delighted actually that she's been released and back to the arms of love and moving forward in her process. When she was, this is probably about 25 years ago, we were doing some processing once, and she shared with me how she was about, I think she was, since she was around 10 or 11 years of age, and there was some kind of a trauma event going on in her world, and how she left her body and went up into the corner of the room and was watching her body go through this event. And so she had an awareness on another level in just her mind of who she was. And you know, I really got to spend the last few days with her too and tap into that. So it was really pretty powerful and pretty fabulous.
Yeah, that's a very powerful time during transitional periods. I've been with a couple of folks during that period, and it certainly, it's just other world type experiences that are going on. I'm glad you had that opportunity.
So am I. It was just such a huge blessing for both of us.
Your website looks awesome. That is really amazing how much you guys have brought that forward in the last 3 years, really, 2 years. That's really sweet, the way the new website's rolling out. I want to compliment you on that, too.
Well, thank you. That's really Daniel and Susan have really opened the space in helping to do that. And Jeannie did, I can't even count how many hours. And we certainly thank Maria Jose, who was the inspiration for shifting to the new website and really got that project started. So it was a product of a lot of hours of work, and we're still just comprehending some of the technology that's in it and working with moving it forward. So it's still a little confusing on this end, but with 5,000, we actually didn't realize it when we first started to move the site over, but there were over 5,000 pages, so it was quite a task because every link had to be mechanically transferred over. It wasn't just you can't just push a button and shift it all. So it's really been quite a challenge, and Jeannie has done just huge amounts of work with that too.
Yep. Well, it's looking great. It's good to talk to you.
All right, so we have a blessed one, and we're down to about 30 seconds, so we're going to close the show out. And Dr. Tim will be doing the show for us tomorrow because we're going to be in jail. We're going up to the high-security prison in Ionia, Michigan, to work with some prisoners. We're in there last week. We're going to be there tomorrow, and then we'll be there again on Friday. So share the show with Dr. Tim tomorrow, and appreciation to everyone. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Sleep.